Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Geek Tower Radio. I'm Dave and I have with me... Gray!
Hello!
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. We had a bit of a week off last week because of it being MCM Comic Con and various things being kind of busy and launching stuff and things to do with the websites and Bex breaking a leg. And
I didn't know about that.
Well, not broken it, but it is in, she's messed up a knee and it's in a big sprained thing. So get well soon, Bex.
Big love to Bex.
She's like an idiot. She was walking around on it for about a month before she actually bothered to go and do anything about it because she didn't think she'd done that much damage. And it turns out she's done quite a lot of damage. So, and also it's catching because one of her friends who is another retro gamer, well, we're at MCM, managed to mess up his leg as well.
Stay away from them.
No, it's not me, it's Bex. It's Bex. You need to stay away from Bex. She's dangerous. It's the leg breaking is catching. So, so how have things been with you anyway?
Yeah, I mean, it's always busy with me. I mean, I say it every time here, but I have, been absolutely swamped. I have been sort of settling in my flat still, which I've moved to, getting ready for Christmas. It's been good, and I have been trying to get through as much as I can with TV as possible, really.
Yes.
So I'll talk about some of the things I have been watching since I was last on, probably about 5-6 weeks ago. I am watching The Good Place. I thought it had a little dip in the middle. I know you're a huge fan, but I just felt there are a couple of episodes, I think about episode 3, 4, 5, I wasn't loving it. I really felt it had lost it, but then the last two... really were brilliant. I was back. I was hooked. I was really going with it. And actually, I like what they've started. As a spoiler alert, really, the fight scene was absolutely fantastic. I just was absolutely loved that clip.
Yes, he's awesome.
That was good. Gutted that it was only 8 episodes. I mean, I was surprised myself when it sort of suddenly wasn't on again this Friday. So I'm looking forward to that returning.
Yeah, it's only quite a short run. It's only like a 13-episode run as well. So even when it comes back, there aren't like another 8 episodes. It's only a few more episodes left. So.
I'm sure I can go to E4 to get my fill of it in the meantime. I'm sure we're going to talk about that a bit later.
Yes.
I am keeping up to date out of everything in the sphere of watching. The ones I'm trying to keep up to date with as much as possible is The Flash and 911. Yes. Those are my sort of like ones I keep dipping into. They're my regular sort of train journey or while I'm cooking dinner. I'll have that on and watching that. I'm still loving both of those. I think the production quality on 911 is just phenomenal. It's just something, does something different from all the other sort of procedural dramas. It just got a different take to it. So I'm really enjoying that.
I like the way that it's put together, and they almost theme some of the episodes where you know they had one that was about awful people a few weeks ago where every person that they met were sort of different variations on awful people, and that was a sort of theme through the episode, and I like the fact that they do things like that. They opened it with a sort of overarching story over like 3 episodes, and you don't get that as much with procedurals.
That was it's really phenomenal nicely episode as well.
The earthquake episodes I thought were brilliant. It's just really, really nicely well put together procedural. That is, I'm really enjoying it.
And then over this time, I was really catching up on all the BBC dramas. I had a real backload at a certain point, and I'd finished Wanderlust, Informer, Black Earth Rising and The Cry in about a space of 2 weeks.
Well done.
And so, and obviously when you're watching a BBC drama, they're full on 1 hour pieces. There's, and you'll really have to focus and concentrate. And I hated the cry after episode one. I was nearly going to give up, but then a few people said, no, no, you've got to keep going. And the cry was brilliant. Informer, phenomenal. I thought that was brilliant. If people want to go and watch that, it's still there. Paddy Considine is really, really, really good series. Wanderlust, I'd take it or leave it. And Black Earth Rising, oh, my brain hurt watching that. It was so political. And while I appreciate what they were doing, it was really a really tough intellectual watch. And sometimes that just doesn't do my brain very well.
No. I've not seen any of those. So I might go and try and catch up with some of them if they're still around on iPlayer over the Christmas
period. I would recommend Informer, Dave. I think you'd really like Informer.
Okay, yeah. I will go and check that out.
Over on Netflix, I finally finished Mindhunter and Glow Season 2. As I said, I'm always a little bit behind on my Netflix series, but I try and binge them when I can. So I finished those this week, and I am sort of like moving on to a few new series on Netflix, which I'm really hooked by The Sinner. I've seen a lot of advertisement for The Sinner.
Oh yes.
And I didn't watch that when it was first released, so I've added that to my to view list.
Yes.
And hopefully
I've not watched any of Glow yet, but Mindhunter I thought was brilliant. I thought that was a superb series, a dramatization looking into sort of real life serial killers, which is really clever. Very, very well done.
The last few episodes really picked up and got a lot better, in my opinion. Mm. And then just last week, I attended the Avengers exhibition Station, or STATION.
Yes.
And my review will go on Geektown shortly. I've just finished writing it. I wasn't hugely impressed, unfortunately. I can see what they were trying to do, but I don't think it was fully executed in the way they could have executed it. And I think there was a lot more potential. I'm not sure if it's going to get better. And we were seeing the opening night and there were still finishing touches to be made. But if you are a real hardcore MCU fan already, I don't think there's going to be anything in there that makes you go, wow, oh, Mark, I'm so, you know, there are little pieces that will make you smile. The Thor's hammer, the Cap's shield, get on Cap's bike and things like that. But there was something missing in my mind that didn't make it stand up. And the ones I was comparing to, and in my review, I compare it to Harry Potter and Friends, two immersive experiences I've been to.
Yeah.
And it just didn't compare. And, you know, they advise that this will take you 2 hours to get round. We were around and out, but in 45 minutes.
Right.
And it was just, I'm not sure it's worth that much. And then I started thinking, okay, who will it really appeal to? And I'm thinking those really young people that may not have been there for the first inception of MCU, you know, the early Iron Man films, the early Hulk films. Maybe they should try going there and they would learn loads. But there's loads of reading. You really have to be switched on. Yeah, it's a bit like a museum, but not hugely engaging. I think you're paying too much to go into a museum there.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because I remember when Bex did the DC exhibit, when they brought that and she had the same sort of feeling of, you know, she enjoyed going to see all the stuff, but there was a lot of reading of things, you know. So certainly for younger kids, it would have been quite a lot of work because you would have had to have gone and like read everything. And, you know, there wasn't as much to engage with as maybe she would have liked. You know, it was good, but, and there were interesting stuff and there was comic book stuff there. Whereas did they add straight comic book stuff into?
No, not really. I mean,
yeah, you see, that's a mistake.
Yeah, there's so much more that could have been done. It was very much, here, you're in the Iron Man room. Now you're in the Hulk room. Now you're in the Cap room. Now you're in the Thor room. Oh, what about everyone else? Oh, they're just going to have one room together.
Right.
And it was a little bit, oh, okay, you've lost it. And then not all of them were there. And I was like, okay, there's the Thanos bit, the other side, but you're still missing other members of the team. There were lovely props, and I get that, but I felt there could have been more context to why they were there. Give me a little brass element underneath. Tell me what film they're in, because, you know, that would engage the children. First seen in Captain America Civil War would have been just a nice little touch to the sort of the items. Good for photos. You can take some good photos, but we moved around it very quickly. And I was a little bit lost the technology that they have for some of the interactive elements. In like, if you think about it, it's really good, but it didn't work and inspire me, you know, a mid-30s-year-old man who's been into comic books and into the MCU for years. It didn't drive me to go and tell my friends to go. But I would have ditched the whole element that you're being inducted into this new secret organization, and I would have purely thrown loads of like, behind the scenes, what happened when they filmed this, who starred as this, you know, would have been really bringing it to life a little bit more. So yeah, that's my review.
Okay. So something for people who are fans, and it, you know, might be worth it if you're in the area. So
I wouldn't encourage people to spend lots of money traveling and then to pay the ticket price. I wonder if, you know, it wouldn't, you'd be a little bit disappointed. So
right, okay, yeah. So. Fair enough.
Dave, what about yourself?
So for me, one of the main shows I've been watching this week is Narcos Mexico, which is the continuation of the Narcos series, but moves everything from Colombia to Mexico now because they've kind of done all the Colombian cartel stuff already. Really, really solid. The two leads are Diego Luna, who plays Felix, who's the leader of the Guadalajara cartel, and Michael Peña, who plays Kiki, who was a DEA agent who he sort of sent down to Mexico to work with this very small DEA team. It's really funny that this being the early 80s, you know, people think of the DEA like, you know, the CIA or the FBI, or which is sort of what it is now. Back in the early 80s, it was like the beaten, unwanted stepchild of the agencies, you know. It was this tiny little agency. So they were kind of underfunded, under-resourced, dealing with a Mexico which is horrifically corrupt, and trying to stop, at the time it was initially sort of the influx of weed into the US, and then of course coke, which came afterwards. It really tells the story of the leader of this cartel, who started out in weed and then ended up teaming up with some of the Colombian cartels to move their drugs through Mexico, to move their coke through Mexico. So it's sort of telling the first bit of his story, really. The disadvantage this maybe has over the original series is you don't have a big name in there that you might recognize, like Pablo Escobar, you know, because Escobar is sort of this mythical kind of figure, and you know, he was the thing that they hung the first season on. It's still exactly the same sort of thing. If you liked Narcos, you're going to like this. It's very much done in Mexican and in Spanish and American. So there is a lot of subtitle reading. So if you're not into that, then, you know, that's an issue. But it's brilliantly acted. It's wonderfully put together. It's very much what you've come to expect from a Narco series. There are a couple of cameos from some faces you will recognize from the original Narcos series as well, because bear in mind that this timeline wise alongside the original show, pretty much.
Is it still as factual like the original Narcos?
To the same extent, they've tweaked certain things. There are a couple of characters in there who are based on characters that did exist, but it's particularly the women. For some reason, they've changed a couple of the female characters who are based on women that did exist in that world. They've just, for whatever reason, had to change the names and slightly altered exactly what happened. But as a general rule, you know, it comes up with the title card at the start, which sort of says, you know, these are based on real life events, however certain things have been changed for dramatic purposes. So, you know, they've messed a little bit with the timeline, but they did that with Narcos as well. It doesn't really affect it. It's just trying to improve the story and make it a bit more of a cohesive story. But yeah, it's absolutely fascinating looking at that bit of the whole jigsaw puzzle that is that South American drug trade. It very much finishes on a point where you can move forward, because ironically the one name that people may know from the Mexican drug cartels is El Chapo, who does appear in this, but he's a very, very minor character. But he, as most people, or you know, the people that know anything about the cartels will know, that he became quite a major figure in the cartel. So it's quite interesting to see him in his very kind of early career as part of the Guadalajara cartel, and he will obviously become a larger figure, assuming they make more seasons of this, which I'm guessing they will do. So,
yeah,
you know. But yeah, very, very well worth watching, particularly if you're a fan of the original Narcos, worth going back to. I also saw Ant-Man and Wasp, which I know I'm way behind on. Ant-Man and Wasp, again, starting Michael Peña is one of the stars of that. Really enjoyed it. I mean, it's a solid perfectly solid Marvel film. I don't think anything's going to beat Infinity War this year for me in terms of movies. But I mean, perfectly workable, decent Marvel movie, thoroughly enjoyable. I love the little things like the way that they deal with the cars, and he has a sort of little toy box of cars which they use to shrink and grow them and shrink them as they need them, you know, which I thought was great.
It was a nice little antidote to some of the dread of the end of Infinity War. I just thought it was a nice little comic tweak, and it worked quite well when I saw it. I was like, oh, that's quite nice to have a little bit of a comedy breakup.
Yes, and the post-credit stuff in that I thought was very clever as well, because that sort of starts to tie it all in as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, that I really enjoyed. That's out now, I think, on DVD. You can go and buy it on DVD, Blu-ray, and Sky have got it on there as well to download. Walking Dead finished. Really solid first half to this new season, which is season 9. I don't want to talk too much about Walking Dead because, you know, we do an entire podcast with Matt on this, so I won't go into it too much, other than say if you dropped out of Walking Dead after the end of season 8, because bits of season 8 was like trudging through mud, now is a good time to jump back into it, because it's a new showrunner. They've introduced a very, very interesting group of antagonists for this new season. And it's got a new life to it. It's very different.
I've heard a lot of good things about it. I mean, I gave up, I think, early season 8. And I've just heard so many positive things about the post-Rick Walking Dead. So
yeah, I mean, the first sort of 5 episodes of the show are really getting rid of Rick Grimes, finding a way of getting him out of the show.
Mm.
Following that, it has another time jump in it, and then really becomes another show again. So it's almost a season of two halves. Those first sort of 5 episodes are the final episodes of Rick. After that, there is another time jump, and you start to move in a slightly different direction as well. That's really when it becomes Angela Kang's show. Angela Kang is the new showrunner that took over. And that's really when it sort of starts to set out her stall for the vision of where it's going. And I've been really enjoying it. It's worth another look. Other shows, Burden of Truth, I've been watching as well, which is a solid kind of procedurally small town legal drama.
I mean, I finished it, but I found some of the episodes frustrating because they always seem to finish on the same note of her like, oh, I've got to pack my bags and leave again.
Yes.
That frustrated me a little bit.
Was getting a little wearing after a while. But as one of those, I mean, it's sort of those sort of summer shows, really. And I'm very late to getting around to finish it. I've had it stacked up on the Skybox for ages. But, you know, as one of those kind of nice summer shows that sort of fills in a bit of a gap, I rather liked it. I really enjoyed it. So I thought that was quite good. Last Ship also finished as well for the very final time. Ended everything, I think, in a nice, pretty rounded way, you know, didn't leave any threads dangling. Again, it's another one of those summer shows that you sort of, I enjoyed it while I was watching it. I'm not necessarily going to miss it particularly. It was fine, but I think it had run its course, because it does get to a point of how many more disasters can like one group of people on a ship deal with. Outside of TV was, of course, MCM Comic Con, which we put a couple of the interviews up for MCM Birmingham Comic Con last week. There is a whole bunch of these interviews, including video versions of the ones that were on the podcast. Those are all up on YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/geektown. So David Morrissey, Jason O'Mara, Ingrid Della, who you won't know the name or the face, but we put her on the podcast last week. She's the person that played Princess Leia in Rogue One, then had her face sort of masked over by the lovely Carrie Fisher.
Ah.
So, but she was really interesting just going through that process. Guy Hansen from the 100 and Shadowhunters. We had an interview with a bunch of Power Rangers. Michael Berryman, who is a classic horror actor. Lala Ward, who played Romana 2 in Doctor Who. Daphne Zugina, who is the princess in Spaceballs as well. The classic Mel Brooks movie, which is an entirely random interview. But, you know, yes, very fun. Very fun. She's lovely. She was in One Tree Hill as well, actually. She had quite a big role in One Tree Hill. But we didn't ask her anything about One Tree Hill. We only asked her about Spaceballs. So. the other big news is we are now in December, of course. So that means...
The Geektown Awards.
The Geektown Awards have launched now. You can go onto the website, you can go and vote for your favourite shows in all the different categories. The prize this year is another huge prize. We've also got a runner-up prize as well. This year's prize includes...
In the Geektown Awards massive prize giveaway this year, you can win DVDs and Blu-rays, including The Greatest Showman, Coco, Rampage, the Family Guy Star Wars trilogy, Jason Bourne, Jodie Whittaker's Trust, Avengers Infinity War, Alice in Wonderland, and the Lego Movie. Books and comic books, including a Harley Quinn notebook, an Avengers notebook, a Star Wars pop culture art book, a Doctor Who novel, Dimensions in Time and Space book, Sonic the Hedgehog notebook, Doctor Who Dalek notebook, and a Superman graphic novel. We have figures and ornaments, including Funko Pops from Gears of War and Magic the Gathering, Kinect's Family Guy figures of Peter, Chris, Brian, and Meg, a bunch of plushies, including the Ghostbusters Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, Godzilla, Batman, and WWE. We have a Dorbs Batman Riddler figure, Gotham Bullock and Edward Nigma action figures, Breaking Bad Walter White vinyl figure, DC Icons Deadman figure, various Star Wars and Doctor Who figures and models, an exclusive Archer figure, and a cult vinyl collectible Highlander Connor McLeod. Other general geeky stuff includes a Star Wars The Force Awakens t-shirt, Family Guy Mouthful of Blanks party game, a Star Wars Kylo Ren ceramic money box, a South Park Cartman coaster, a Doctor Who Sonic Spork, Princess Bride playing cards, Batman egg cups, Superman backpack, and a whole stack of other geeky bits and pieces. Finally, we have a Now TV smart stick, plus a selection of testers for all the Now TV packages, and an Amazon Fire 7-inch tablet. The whole prize package is worth over £700. You could also be in with a chance to win the runner-up prize, which is a mystery box of loads of geeky goodies worth £125. So go to geektown.co.uk/awards and get voting.
So that is the prize package for this year, or some of the prize package, actually. That is in no way a full list of everything that is in the main prize. There is a load of extra stuff because I keep on finding things around the house and like, oh, that needs to go in as well.
So, I remember going into that competition this time last year before I was a co-host on Geektown.
Yes, unfortunately, yeah. You're ineligible to eligible
to enter now. This year. I'm gutted.
all you need to do is go to the website, click on the Geektown Awards tab. You can go to geektown.co.uk, go and enter. You'll be put into the prize draw once you've filled out your stuff. And that's it. Good luck with winning. We will announce the winners in early January. They will get a phone call from me to say congratulations, you've won. And that's it. So yeah, go to the website, get voting. You can be in with a chance to win a huge load of prizes. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to the TV and film news. So, TV and film news this week. We start off with renewals, cancellations, and pickups. First was an interesting one. There's a show called The Passage, which is being picked up by Fox. It's actually a Fox US show, which is kind of why they picked it up, basically. This stars Mark Paul Gosselaar, who you will know from various shows, but most famously playing Zach in Saved by the Bell. Still, he's never going to live that down. That's basically what people know him for. But Franklin and Bash as well was the other thing that people were known from. So where it's him as a federal agent. He's protecting a young girl who was a scientific test subject, and she possibly is basically the savior to humanity. And he's supposed to bring her to this project, but he starts to become slightly concerned about exactly what they're going to do to her. So becomes a kind of surrogate father to her and trying to protect her at any cost. It's got a kind of vampire-y, zombie-ish feel to it, by the sounds of it. That was sort of how it was touted originally. It looks like it could be a really interesting show. There is a trailer up on the website if you want to go and have a look at it. Coming to Fox UK on the 15th of January, so that will be one to look out for. It's running one day after the US as well, so there's not like a big gap. It's coming fairly quickly. other pickups, you've got E4 have picked up The Good Place, which we were talking about earlier. It's now going to be free to air. So it's still going to premiere the day after the US on Netflix, but it's going to be free to air on E4 from 13th of December. They're airing that. That will be running season one. If you haven't got Netflix and you haven't seen The Good Place yet, I urge you to go and watch it because it's absolutely hilarious.
It is season one. Oh.
Yeah, it's the best comedy I think you will see all year. It's one of the best comedies I've seen in a very, very long time. It's original and different and can't talk highly enough about it. AMC have renewed Preacher, so that will be back for a fourth season. That, of course, runs on Amazon Prime over here. I actually haven't finished watching the final season yet because, I don't know, I just wasn't in the right frame of mind for it. But I need to go back to it at some point. Castle Rock has been picked up by Starzplay, which is the Amazon Prime add-on channel, which is supposed to be coming to Virgin as well as an add-on channel to Virgin. Although I believe they've been having some technical difficulties because it was supposed to launch by now and hasn't. So that is supposed to be coming 14th of December. That will be arriving on there for season one of Castle Rock, which of course is the Stephen King show based around various elements of Stephen King novels, kind of all brought together into one narrative. Mm. Netflix have announced that they are doing a live action version of Cowboy Bebop, which is an anime series, I believe. I don't know anything about anime.
I know nothing about this. When you put it up on the website, I was a little bit like, what?
Yeah. So it's described as a space western jazz inspired genre bending story.
It follows
a bunch of people who are a ragtag crew of bounty hunters on the run from their past as they hunt down the solar system's most dangerous criminals. They'll even save the world for a price. So, I mean, it sounds like it could be quite fun. It's a co-production between Netflix and Tomorrow Studios, who are the people that made Aquarius and the upcoming Snowpiercer TV series, and Midnight Radio, which were the people that made the wonderfully bonkers Zoo. So, could be interesting. It's been written by Christopher Yost, who was the writer of Thor Dark World and Thor Ragnarok, and he's written Star Wars Rebels as well. So, interesting.
Interesting.
Interesting one, I think. A couple of news bits that have dropped today as well. Comedy Central UK have ordered a new series of blockbusters.
I saw this.
with Dara O'Brien, the man who's making it his mission to try and host every single TV show on TV at some point. Dara O'Brien is going to be the host for it. It's interesting that it's Comedy Central that have picked this up because they're obviously going for the kind of comedic nostalgia.
Yeah.
And the sort of 8 out of 10 cats does countdown audience, I think, is what they're aiming for. Yeah, I mean, Dara's great. I adore Dara. And I think Blockbusters was always a fun show and it always had that kind of cheesy cult element to it. So, yeah, great. Why not? That's coming next year. And then Sky have picked up Dick Wolf's FBI series, which is another procedural following the FBI. It's from Dick Wolf, who's the guy that does all the Chicago's and did all the Law and Orders.
Yeah.
So you know exactly what sort of thing you're going to get with
this. I was just taking a scan of some of the reviews, and I'd stay off the reviews before you watch it.
Really? Are they
some
that
people
vicious?
Aren't being nice about it. But I like Dick Wolf stuff, so I might definitely give that a go when it comes and give it a try.
I'll take a look at it. I'm sure. I mean, I've not really done any of the Law and Orders or any of the Chicago things because I just don't have the time, but I might take a look at that one. Sky picked that up. They've not said which channel it's on yet, but I'm pretty positive it's going to end up on Sky Witness at some point in the new year. They've also extended their deal with CBS for Elementary, Madam Secretary, and The Late Late Show with James Corden. They'd already announced they picked up Magnum, which is part of that little cluster that goes with NCIS LA, Hawaii Five-O, and MacGyver, which are all part of their own little universe. So we kind of knew that's probably who was going to pick it up because they're not going to want it to go anywhere else. So that's going to come early in the new year as well with Magnum. The other big cancellation news, which was sort of a larger story.
I just get my shocked reaction ready.
Right. Netflix have cancelled Daredevil after 3 seasons.
No.
This was a little bit surprising because up until now it had seemed like, you know, with Iron Fist and Luke Cage, both of those shows, they basically came out and said they'd lost half their viewing figures pretty much from the first season to the second season. There was issues with showrunners on Luke Cage, which also didn't help. There were sort of reasons why you can sort of see why they might cancel that. This, I think, is the one that signals that none of them are going to survive. Because
that's why when I heard about Luke Cage, I just had a gut reaction because it was not far along from the announcement of Disney Plus. So I just have a feeling, and I know that we're waiting for Jessica Jones and The Punisher, and I just have a gut that those two will follow in a very similar, very quick suit, yeah. Which is why I'm less surprised. I think I'm sad, but yeah. I'm less surprised than I thought I would be, because I just felt like this was coming.
Given the positive reaction that the third season of Daredevil got, if it was anything other than them taking them all off Netflix, that just seems a surprise to me. And it seems to be a decision from Netflix side, not from the Marvel side, because none of the Marvel Studios team seemed to know that this was going to happen. So, I mean, Jessica Jones and The Punisher have already filmed new seasons, so those are going to be coming out at some point, but I rather suspect that those will be final seasons of those as well. So the question is really what happens now? And one thing we do know is they're not going on to Disney Plus, despite Disney Plus being the new streaming service that they're launching. This rather feels like Netflix have decided that they just don't want to pay the money to Marvel and Disney, given that they're launching basically a competing service. Because you've got to remember, as well as launching Disney Plus, they also now have a 60% stake in Hulu as part of that Fox merger. So they've really been bombarded from all sides. And although they're not going, these shows aren't definitely not going to Disney Plus, or at least that's what they're saying at the moment, there are other possibilities. You could move them wholesale onto Hulu if they wanted to do that. The reason they won't be coming to Disney Plus is because Disney Plus is a strictly PG-13 rated platform. So you'd have to retool a lot of these shows and take out a lot of the sort of sex, drugs and violence in those Netflix Marvel shows to be able to get them onto that network, which you could do, but it would alter them in some way. And I'm not sure whether they want to do that. If they were going to move them to another service, it's likely you probably move them onto Hulu. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not, but that's certainly an option for them. The other option would be that you do something which is maybe integrate them more properly into the MCU. So you could actually introduce them into the movie universe, which they've only really been on the fringes of up until now. We've never had any direct crossover. They've made references to it, but they've never had a full proper crossover with it. So you could potentially do that. Who knows? Or it may be that all the characters just disappear. But given...
never to be seen again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see maybe some of them move across, because Punisher has had run-ins with the Avengers, so it would be interesting to see particularly that version of Punisher crossover in some way. But I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to see what happens with it. It's very difficult to tell. They've repeatedly said that they are going to be showing up. There is going to be a future for these characters, but they could just be saying that. They've not made any kind of moves as to what that future will be. So
we sit with intrigue, and maybe it will make sense after Avengers Part 2.
Yes, maybe it will. Maybe it will. So yes, Netflix succeeding where Thanos failed. Another Netflix announcement. They're making a Young Wallander series based on the Henning Mankell books. Wallander, of course, is a show which I'm sure some of people are familiar with, because it had a Swedish version and then got remade in the UK by the BBC in 2008 with Ken Branagh taking the lead. I mean, I don't know them particularly well, but it's basically that they're looking to take the detective and make a new show with a British and Swedish cast. It's going to be a new original story. It's going to be set in Sweden. Presumably, if it's a British and Swedish cast, it's going to be in mixed languages, going to be in Swedish and British and English, presumably. It's going to be seeing Kurt Wallander taking on his first gripping case. The story focuses on his formative experiences, professional and personal, facing Kurt as a recently graduated police officer in his early 20s. So, did you watch any of the Wallander series?
It never really appealed to me at the time. I do like Ken Branagh, but it wasn't something I watched. If I watch any sort of those sort of dramas, I'm a Vera fan. If I'm going to choose any very famous actor who plays an aging detective, Vera was the one that I went for.
Right, right, yeah. So they're saying production will start next year, so it will be either next year or 2020 before it actually makes on there. But the original novel apparently sold 40 million copies and has been translated into 40 languages. So they kind of know what they're doing, I think.
Yeah, picking potential up there.
A lot of potential. So yes, Young Wallander, that's either coming either next year or the year after. And there've been a couple of bits of casting news as well. Alexis Denisof is joining The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina for its second season. He's a man that knows something about witches. He did marry one after all, because he's married to Alison Hannigan, who of course played Willow in Buffy.
Willow, yeah.
So yes, he's set to play a character called Adam Masters. He's the boyfriend of Mary Wardle, which is Michelle Gomez's character. He's described as handsome and charming. He's returning to Greendale after a stint overseas working with physicians without frontiers, so Doctors Without Borders, basically, unaware that his fiancée has been taken over by the demoness Madame Satan. So he's actually going to first appear in the Midwinter's Tale, which is this Christmas episode, which is coming out later in December. So he will first pop up in that, but he is going to be a series regular for next season as well. And they've also announced that, you know, this Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss Dracula series that they're making for the BBC. Taking the sort of Sherlock idea and making Dracula instead, so it's three 90-minute episodes. They found their Dracula. It's going to be Klaus Bang is the man's name. He's a Danish actor. He said, "I'm thrilled to be taking on the role of Dracula, especially when the script is in the hands of incredible talents like Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss, and the team responsible for Sherlock. I'm so excited that I get to dig into this iconic, super interesting character. Yes, he's evil, but there's so much more to him. He's charismatic, intelligent, witty, and sexy. I realise there's a lot to live up to with the amazing people that have played him over the years, but I feel so privileged to be taking on this incredible character." I mean, he's not an actor that I particularly know. He does very much look the part. If you go to the website
I've seen the image.
Yes, very, very much looks the part. Yeah. I think he's a really suitable guy for it. He's probably better known to European audiences than he is to UK audiences, although he is going to have quite a big year. People will know him fairly soon. He was in Borgen, the Danish drama, so some people might know him from that. He's about to pop up in the fifth season of The Affair, the big US drama, and he's also got a bunch of new movie projects coming out, the biggest of which is probably The Girl in the Spider's Web with Claire Foy. He's got The Burnt Orange Heresy, which is opposite Donald Sutherland and Mick Jagger, and Lyrebird with Guy Pearce. So he's got some big things coming out this year. You'd think he's a young actor, but I think he's actually in his like either 40s or 50s. So he just seems to have hit for him this year. So
yeah, not 1967. So yeah, he's just over 50.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously been famous in Europe and been in some fairly big shows there, but you know, he really seems to have hit internationally for him this year. So, which is awesome. It'd be very interesting to see how he appears in Dracula. I'm very much looking forward to that series. I think it could be really, really good because, yeah, Mark Gatiss particularly is a massive horror fan, and they did such a good job with Sherlock. It'd be very interesting to see where that goes. So that's all the news we have for this week. Next, we have the interview.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The interview this week is with two of the composers behind the Amazon series, The Romanoffs. The Romanoffs, if you've not seen it yet, comes from Mad Men's 9-time Emmy-winning creator, Matthew Weiner. It's 8 separate stories about people who believe that they are descended from the former Russian royal family. It's a really good series. It has a phenomenal A-list cast with people like Diane Lane, Christina Hendricks, Aaron Eckhart, Corey Stoll, Noah Wilde, plus, I mean, I could be all day naming people, but it's well worth a look, and it's on Amazon Prime if you want to go and see it. The two composers are Sonia Bilosova and Giona Ostinelli. Sonia is actually from St. Petersburg in Russia, the same place as the Royal Romanov family. Giona is from Switzerland, but they now both work together. They're based in LA. They've also worked on shows such as Sacred Lies, which was Facebook Watch's first scripted drama. They worked on Paramount Network's reimagining of the Stephen King novel, The Mist. And they worked on various other films and TV shows as well. So it was really fascinating talking to them. They were really, really fun and were bouncing off each other. It was a great interview. Here they are talking about their episodes of The Romanoffs. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Thank you for coming on to talk about The Romanoffs, which is the TV show you've been working on. Now, I've managed to watch the first episode of it, which I know isn't your episode, but I didn't realise that until after I watched it. I didn't realise that you were splitting them between two other composers. So I got an idea of the show, I just haven't seen your one yet. So sorry about that.
No.
They're an hour and a half long, which is it's quite long for a TV show.
Yeah, but it's like eight movies.
It's basically films. It's not a TV show. It's like eight films that...
That's what I just said.
Yeah, come out every week.
Yeah, I can see why they ended up splitting it over four composers in total. Are the other two guys working together as well? Or are they separate?
No, they're separate.
No, everyone was separately.
Okay.
We're the only team.
Go team. So you've been working on the show, episode 3, and you got the finale as well, didn't you?
Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
Coming out this week, yes.
I think that makes you better than the other two. You got the finale. So
we didn't want to say that, but now it's brought it up.
Since you bring it up, I mean...
I really hope I don't have to interview either of those guys later. let's start off with a little bit of background. How did you guys get into composing in the first place? I'm assuming it's two different routes because you've not like always been working together. So,
well, I come, you know, I'm from Switzerland, so
yes,
I started out playing drums and piano when I was a kid, and I always been wanted to write music. I used to shoot, trying to recreate scenes from films with my 8mm cameras when I was a kid. So I was always very interested in music for films, and once I find out how to do it, how to pursue it, then I just went on. I just took off from Switzerland and moved to LA.
Well, for me, because, you know, growing up in Russia, I've been always exposed to this great Russian classical education that Russia is very famous for.
Yeah.
So I started playing piano at the age of 5. I made my debut at the St. Petersburg Philharmonic, I believe, at the age of 8. Then around the same age, I started taking composition lessons. I won my first international competition, I think, when I was 13, and then the same year I received the Russian Ministry of Culture Award. I was admitted to college when I was 15. So for me, it was just a natural progression. I've been always surrounded by music, and yeah, it was just a natural and obvious choice.
I think that's what you call overachiever.
Thank you.
So if you would like to talk to more like mortals people, I'm here. I'm available to talk.
Oh dear, yeah. Wow. So, I mean, as we mentioned earlier, the Romanoff show, they're an hour and a half, so they are basically feature films every single week. You've done the two episodes, the third episode and the eighth episode, which is the finale. How did you get involved with that in the first place?
Well, you know, with me being Russian and the show being about the Romans,
yeah,
I might be a descendant from the Romanovs myself. Why not?
Yeah, quite possible. There seems to be a lot of them. So
how could we not get involved with the Romanovs? That's more of a question.
Yes.
No, I think for us, though, when we saw there was this project, I think both Joan and I saw it as something that we haven't really done before. And because of that, that was very interesting for us. So when they entered post-production, we received the phone call that Matthew Weiner wanted to meet with us. And we met.
Of course.
Yeah, we're like, absolutely. We met, we sat down, we talked with Matt. We realized that, you know, we share the same passion. And yeah, we just clicked very well. So
yes,
that was it.
Matthew has a huge appreciation of Russian music. And so we had tons to talk about.
Oh yeah, there was a lot to talk about.
There was a lot.
Yeah, and in general, he has a lot of appreciation for music. So he's very musical. So there was a lot to talk about. And
then we went from there.
He's the guy that created Mad Men. So you kind of know that you're going to get something special, I think, when you're working with a guy like that.
Yes, extremely special. And, you know, they showed us the third episode and we were like, wow, this is amazing. We really want to do it. And we started floating ideas and sharing ideas with Matthew, and it was a lot of fun.
Sonia, your background, like you say, you come from Russia. Does that sort of influence your approach to the music for this?
Yes and no. Yes, because, I mean, it's a show about the Romanovs, or at least people claiming to be that they're descendants of the Romanovs. So we definitely wanted to have some Russian flavors in the score, but at the same time, we wanted to keep a broader perspective. So you get a little bit of both.
Well, for example, for episode three, though.
Yeah, for episode three, especially episode three, because episode three and season finale, they're very different score-wise. Episode three is very, very eclectic, whether episode eight is very thematic. So specifically for episode three, there was one scene for which we actually had to write a piano concerto, which was done overnight. So for me, being both a concert pianist, that was like literally a dream come true to write a piano concerto.
And then it became a nightmare come true when she realized, oh, I have to learn now and record it.
But yeah.
You know, that's yeah.
Different story.
That's a different story. But, and then there was another scene for which we actually wrote a domra concerto. Domra is a Russian instrument. It's a Russian folk instrument. It's basically like a Russian version of mandolin or lute. Right. And domra is widely used in Russian folk orchestras. So there was one scene which required that distinct Russian approach. You haven't seen it yet, so I'm not going to spoil it for you which one it is.
Scenes.
Yeah, it's multiple scenes, and this theme just, you know, keeps developing throughout.
It's a recurring theme.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme. It just keeps developing throughout. So it ended up being a domra concerto, and I had to call up actually my friend from Russia to record the domra part for us, because finding someone who plays domra in Los Angeles
and could record it in
someone who could record it here, that was a little bit challenging.
Yeah, yeah. We contact them and they're like, yeah, give us a month and we can learn it. And we're like, no.
Yeah, so to call up my friends from Russia to record that for us. But so yeah, definitely a lot of Russian influences, but we definitely wanted to keep a broader perspective. And so there are other scenes with completely different approach, like specifically episode three, because the score is so eclectic. We have some hints of the Hollywood Golden Age sound. We have, you know, a big lushy orchestra. Then we have very chamber strings type of sections and scenes. We have the scenes which are very electronic and synths. And for those scenes, we didn't just want to use, you know, modern synthesizers, because the episode, when you watch it, you'll see that it has a very kind of vintage feel to it. And so we didn't just want to use modern synthesizers, but instead
we went all the way and we recorded synths through tape machine and then imported that into Pro Tools. So yeah, we went through the hard part. Gives a nice feeling and it's vintage feel, so it was worth it.
Yeah, you mentioned there that the sound's very different between sort of episode three and episode eight. Is there musically any sort of through theme across all the episodes? Did you have any conversations with the other two guys?
Absolutely not,
because the whole point of the show is that every episode is a standalone story. It's shot in a different location. It features different cast. It's a different story, different genre, different everything. So it's like eight standalone movies. So therefore, the score for every episode had to be completely different. So between, you know, episode three and season finale, the scores are absolutely different, like as different as they could possibly get. With episode three being like so eclectic and so versatile, you have, you know, some scenes which are more Russian, then you have like this electronics, then you have, you know, the piano concerto and the domra concerto. With episode eight,
much more, would you call it more orchestral eight or?
Well, I would say it's very thematic, because the score for episode eight basically all derives out of a single theme that gets introduced in the very middle of the episode.
Yes.
So when we were approaching that episode, we started by writing that theme, and it took us a couple of days, you know, finding that theme and perfecting it. And then once we found it, we were able to, you know, go backwards and approach every other scene by planting hints of that theme into every cue. So episode eight is incredibly thematic.
Right. Okay. What's the division like between the two of you? Do you work on cues and stuff together and then separate, or are you working always together, or how do you split things up?
There is no division. We're always working together because it's, you know, composing, you stay for so many hours in the studio by yourself, and I think it becomes kind of like a trap, and it becomes, you know, alone in your studio. So sharing with somebody else, I think it's great creatively because you can bounce ideas immediately, and you can come up with more creative way to approach scenes and themes.
I think for us, you know, because we come from such different backgrounds, you know, me with all my Russian classical, you know, education, and Joanna coming from Switzerland and having played in bands like rock bands, pop bands, we have completely different music backgrounds. So when we, you know, compose together, having the diversity of styles, like we complement each other very well. So we compose together. Yeah, there is really no division because in this case, you know, we come up with new ideas and new approaches that we wouldn't even think of otherwise. So it's just much more creative at the end of the day.
Also, because for us, when we write, we also record on the moments a lot. Like we play a lot of instruments between the two of us, but we kind of divide the duties of who plays what. So, you know, we're in the studio and maybe I play something better. So I'm recording that on the spot. And then there is another something else that Sonia plays better. And so she records it on the spot and we keep going back and forth.
Yeah, because like when we, you know, when we write something, our writing process is kind of like producing at the same time because we do record a lot of instruments that Jonah mentioned. So yeah, it's us together in the studio 24/7, literally.
Right. Okay. And you mentioned some of the instruments you use there, as well as using more orchestral sort of stuff. Are you actually using orchestra for that, or is that created using virtual instruments and stuff?
No, we are using the orchestra, yeah, in both episodes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
There's
like literally everything.
You got access to a full orchestra for it.
Yep.
Nice. So was that recorded in LA?
Well, we didn't record it in Los Angeles because we couldn't. So what we did in Los Angeles, we recorded all the soloistic parts. So right. Because we have a lot of soloistic elements. We have a solo cello, we have a solo violin, and we have very virtuosic parts. So this was all done in Los Angeles.
Because for us also, when we're recording there is an orchestra, we still approach it very much in a very record producing type of feel. So we do a lot of, we try to have as much separation as we can between the elements. So as Sonia mentioned, all the soloists were recorded separately.
Yeah, the solos were done separately. There was a lot recorded in our studio because we were doing it as we were going. So yeah, at the end there was just an orchestra recording, which was done overseas.
Yes.
Right, okay. That makes sense. I mean, it's quite common for them to film it out overseas, partly because it tends to be cheaper to do it that way than record place with people in LA.
It's cheaper, but it's not even that because, you know, with the whole union situation going on in Los Angeles, it's not always you can actually record in Los Angeles.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I see.
Like sometimes you would have a situation when in your contract, actually, there would be a clause of saying you cannot use union and record in Los Angeles.
Right. Okay. All that fun stuff.
Yeah, well, just something we have to deal with.
Yes, totally. What's been the most fun thing you get to do on your job?
We really like taking, you know, instruments and transform them into something else when applying them to scenes. So I just really enjoy taking instruments, recording them, and then transforming into something completely different sounding wise through the computer.
Like another project we're working on right now. So we ordered Erhu, which is an Asian two-stringed violin. Mm. So this instrument arrived for us from Singapore. And it's really fun because they had to obtain a lot of different permits in order to import it into the United States because the instrument has a snake skin on it. Right. So finally, you know, after we ordered a month later, we received the instrument and it's beautiful. And we're using a lot of Erhu for this project that we're working on right now. However, not, you know, with its natural sound, but we processed it a lot. We applied different distortions, different effects, and it literally sounds like an electric guitar. It's awesome.
Yeah, or for example, 2 years ago with The Mist, like we spent a week in our studio with an upright piano and we recorded anything possible with this upright piano. Like we bow it, we plucked it, we... we did so much to it.
Yeah, we just literally spent the day in the studio with a piano. There were two pianos. One was an upright piano. The other one was a grand piano. So we bowed the strings. We plucked them with like anything possible. We plucked them with coins. We plucked them with, you know, car keys. With the grand piano, we threw lithium batteries on the strings and recorded, you know, the resonance. We screamed into the strings. strings and recorded that resonance. So like we did anything possible and impossible with the piano, then we gathered this whole library of effects, and then that became the core sound for the Myst character.
Yeah, and then, you know, transforming the sound with the computer with effects and other things, it doesn't sound like a piano anymore, but it has the organic sound that...
Yeah, we love that process of, you know, using a natural, organic live instrument and then transforming that sound into something completely different and creating new instruments and new sounds out of that original sound.
It's always nice when you get a new toy to play with as well when you're making music, I'm sure.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Exactly.
I interviewed Nate Barr a while back, and he's just finished this big cinema organ that he got from Fox. He's like built a studio around this organ, and I was kind of joking with him about it. Every single piece of music that he writes now is going to have that organ in it somewhere, because it's his new toy and he's been building it for like 5 years. So
yeah,
well, you know, also how easy, because for now, you know, on the computer, but we try to use samples the least as possible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because samples are great, and, you know, especially with the technology now being so evolved, samples are getting better and better. However, the downside is, you know, this is the technology available for everyone. So why would we want to use something that's available for everyone? So
not only, but then your sound, you don't sound particular anymore. You just sound like everybody else. So we try to use like majority just what we record ourselves or what we create ourselves.
Yeah, we have a lot of libraries.
Yeah, we have a lot of custom libraries that over the years we created, and yes.
Like you say, it's always good to sound unique on these things, you know. So
yes.
Talked about sort of the most fun thing. What's the most challenging thing for you on a project?
I don't know, actually.
Having Sonia singing. That's the most challenging thing. I'll kill you not. We just finished a TV show.
Oh my God.
Called Sacred Lies.
Okay, and he's right.
Yeah, that's the most challenging thing. She's Russian. Oh my goodness, she's so stubborn. So we just finished this TV show called Sacred Lies for, it was the first Facebook Watch TV show. And we approached this score very much in a record type of
way. Yeah, writing that score was literally like producing an album, because, you know, some of our early conversation with the showrunner included that we're going to be using, you know, female voices and vocals in the score.
Right.
So we started with that, and then, you know, while we were writing, we felt like it needed more. So from just, you know, using voices, we started, you know, writing actual songs,
lyrics, and
lyrics, and I had to sing that.
Yeah, so I had to sing. And was, you know, she's not a professional singer.
I mean, of course I sing, but I don't see myself as a singer because I'm a pianist. So I had to sing, and it was fun.
Well, for her, me trying to convince her that her singing is actually really good, really excellent, it was a challenging. I still remember a whole weekend we spent in the studio, and I was telling her, I was like, these vocals are perfect. And
no, they were not perfect.
Yeah, it was a weekend of like troubleshooting vocals. But, you know, for Sonia, I mean, she has perfect pitch, and for her singing, I mean, she's always spot on it. So she's very humble about it, but she sounds great every time. It's just taking her out of the shell. Pretty much.
So what has been your favorite experience whilst you've been writing together?
I think, you know, every project has something different. I think, you know, it's the overall creative team that we get to collaborate with for every project. That's literally the best part of it. Like, for example, on The Roman, I was collaborating with Mads, you know, with the other creative team, including the editors, the producers. It's just such a cool team behind it that, you know, when you get to collaborate with such awesome, creative and passionate people.
And inspiring
people, they inspire you to write music, to write awesome music, and to create something unique and different. So I would say, at least for me, this is the best part of my job.
No, I agree. Especially because, you know, on a project, you stay for a long time. So...
Like, you can be on a project from several months to several years. Let's say if it's a TV show that lasts for several seasons.
Right. So I think inspiration is really dependent on the people you work with, you know, how they inspire you and how, you know, they, you know, inspire you to do something cool and different. And
to me, it's the best thing when you meet with a director or showrunner, you have a productive conversation, and then you come back to the studio and you're bursting with ideas and like that tingling that you get, you know, that you want to create something new and something unique and you want to try things. Like, that's literally the best thing.
Well, that was for both episode 3 and 8 of The Romanovs. That, like, we met with Matthew for episode 3, we spotted, and then we came back, and it was like bursting with ideas. Also because the deadline was very tight. But
yeah, for episode three, we had a week and a half to record, mix, and deliver the score.
That's for episode eight,
yeah.
Well, yeah, especially because week and a half, and you think, well, a TV show, it's, you know, it's a long time. But this is, first of all, it's like a feature length type of film of episodes. And then, you know, week and a half, like in 2 days, we already had 90% of the score done, showed it to Matthew and the producers, get notes, and then be ready, you know, setting up the recording session and all of that. So
yeah, so like literally the composing part took a couple of days. It was, you know, the rest, organizing, recording, delivering.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the Domra concerto, like it was written between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. and then at 9 a.m. we had the meeting with Matthew to show him the music.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was, you know, showing up at the meeting, I was like, well, hopefully we still like what we did last night.
Yeah. That's I mean, I've heard tight turnarounds on TV shows before, but that's crazy.
Yeah, and then, you know, because also it was highly virtuosic music, so recording wasn't just, you know, you record and then, hey, that's it. You know, the recording is perfect. It's still a lot of like on a record, you know, editing the player, making it sounds great, the best you can, the best take. So it still took time. So once the recording was done, it was still 1-2 days of producing the soundtrack and then delivering to the dub stage. So we were literally delivering the music as they were dubbing the episodes.
Yeah, that's episode 3. With episode 8, we had a more relaxed schedule because that particular episode was done way in advance. So right. They were like, well, since we're done, we might as well give it to you guys. So we had, I think,
4 weeks.
Yeah, like slightly over a month to do it. So that was relaxing.
Yeah,
and you know, that we took our time. That's why we spent like 3 days on coming up with the theme and perfectioning. And I think we're doing like a cue every, like it would take us like 1-2 days to do a cue, and we were making it perfect. And then, you know, when we showed the music to Matthew.
Yeah, it was fun because when we received that episode, Matthew was actually out of town. So he didn't have time to do a spotting session. So we just met with the editor and the producer. We sat down and we kind of went through the music and talked about it. So then, you know, we got the episode, we wrote the whole score, and then Matthew, when he heard the score for the very first time, you know, he directly, like, we didn't have any spotting sessions with him, so he did not really know what to expect. Then he heard the score, he's like, yeah, I'm great.
Yeah, he was asking to move up the dub mix earlier because he was like, this is done.
I mean, yeah, I'm like, Matt, you do realize, right, we still have to, you know, record it.
Yeah, record it.
Yeah, but episode 8 was very nice and very relaxing schedule wise.
Yes.
Good. Good. That's much better. So you're done with the Romanovs now. What's next for you?
Well, we cannot talk about it yet.
Okay.
But you're going to hear it soon. It's,
it's cool.
It's something that, let's just say there is a lot of hurdy-gurdy.
There's a lot of hurdy-gurdy. So we ordered hurdy-gurdy, and I'm learning to play that instrument, and I'm having so much fun with that. And yeah, I'm becoming a virtuosic hurdy-gurdy player.
Interesting. Okay. Can you say if that's a TV or film?
It's a TV show.
It's a TV show.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. I'll look out for that. And the last couple of questions that we always ask people. First one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
We just finished watching Killing Eve.
Oh, Killing Eve was...
Cool. And that was such a killer TV show.
Yeah.
No, it was so terrific, the TV show. I just loved it. Everything was so amazing about it.
Another one we finished also quite recently is A Very English Scandal.
Yes.
Have you seen that one?
Terribly, I haven't, even though it's a BBC show.
No, that one is great. Yeah.
Both
are great.
Hugh Grant's performance was just terrific. And yeah.
Yeah, we've been actually watching a lot of British shows lately.
Yeah, a lot. Don't know why, but yes.
Well, because they're good. That's why.
Yeah, they are.
That's the thing. They are. They are really good. We're really enjoying them.
Yeah, every aspect of it. They're always very good. So,
like, Killing Eve is just such a great show.
I'm dying for season 2. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm very much looking forward to that coming back. And the last question, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
See, that's a hard, difficult question because there are so many TV shows that I really love, but I love them because how they are done. So yeah. I didn't really necessarily see it like, oh, if I would do it, would I still love it? No, it would be different. Mm. So, you know, the thing, it's like, It's like, you know, if you have a book, you know, which book would you have loved to have written? But then it would be different. It wouldn't be that. You know what I mean?
Well, you can pick a future kind of genre, maybe, that you'd like to work in.
Oh, a future genre. Well, Sonia, this is on you.
I don't really have a genre preference. It's really about the project for me, you know, how inspiring the team is behind the project, how interested I am in the project. You know, if it's something that we haven't done before, like with the Romanovs, for example, that was something completely different for us. And we were so excited about it. Or with Sacred Lies, we got to actually, like, the score was literally like producing a record. So we produced the whole album with songs, with lyrics, with me singing, or like with The Mist, you know, creating all these, you know, weird sounds and sonorities, you know, with the piano, with other instruments. So, like, you know, when we approach every project, we try to do something unique and different and something that we haven't done before. So to me, it's not really about a specific genre, but just being excited about a project.
It's more about the opportunity.
About the opportunity, to create something new and cool.
Any particular directors or team that you would like to work with, though?
I would work with the Romanovs team in a heartbeat. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, that's very true. It was such a terrific thing.
In a heartbeat for me. Because everyone is just so dedicated and so passionate about what they do. It's such a pleasure.
It's very intense, but that's good type of intense type of experience.
Yeah, because, like, you know, everyone on the creative end of the team, they're all like very hardcore perfectionists, and so are we. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I never met on a TV show, you know, editors that would stay, you know, working over the weekend, or that at midnight they were still there working every day. And this was that team that, because we work long, long hours, and I was so surprised that, I mean, they were the same, and I never had that experience before. Especially,
that's rare.
Yeah, that's very rare. So it was really cool. It was really such a cool experience.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. All right. Well, I let you get back to it. Thank you for coming on and spending a little bit of time just to chat through your work.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you so much, Dave. It was really a pleasure.
Soon we'll be able to talk about another project. You'll see.
Yeah. Oh, I look forward to seeing what that is when that comes out, because if it's got a hurdy-gurdy in it, that's got to be worth listening to.
Oh, trust me. It's going to be...
It doesn't just have a hurdy-gurdy. It has a virtuosic hurdy-gurdy.
Yeah, well, there you go, you see. Awesome. Ah. Well, I should look out for that anyway.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
Okay, cheers. Bye-bye.
So that was the interview with Romanovs composer Sonia Bilasova and Giona Ostinelli. You can find the Romanovs on Amazon Prime if you want to go and look for it there. There are, as I said in the interview, about an hour and a half long. So, you know, they are effectively like watching a movie, each one, but they're well worth it. They're really fun, really interesting. Now we have some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week on TV. As we're in December, of course, there's very little actually starting at the moment, although there is a couple of fairly big programmes that I am quite excited about. The Marvellous Mrs. Maisel is back for its second season. That's on Amazon Prime on the 5th of December. This is, outside of The Good Place, the best comedy I've seen in years. It's hilariously funny. It's written by the people behind the Gilmore Girls. It has that sort of snappy dialogue that you know from the Gilmore Girls. It's just phenomenally well put together. I can't recommend this highly enough. So if you've not watched it yet, go and watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, the first season of that. Second season comes out on the 5th of December. It's absolutely brilliant. Fortitude is back for its third and final season. I think this is a shorter run as well, but that's on the 6th of December. That comes back at 10 o'clock. So return to the slightly odd Arctic town of Fortitude. I love the first season. Second season I was a little bit mixed on, so we'll see where it goes with the third season and see if it managed to pull it together. One of the problems I had with the second season was it was a bit too long and they were stretching things out. So if this is a shorter run, that might actually improve things. The Ranch is back for season 3 or part 6, depending how you're counting it. They seem to be very confused with how they're putting this together in terms of the segmenting. But that's back on Netflix on the 7th of December, which if you're a fan of that, go and see that. And Counterparts, second season of that, comes onto Stars Play, which is the Amazon Prime add-on channel. First season of Counterpart was absolutely brilliant. Second season, I've seen the first couple of episodes because I interviewed some of the guys. There is a interview going up on the website fairly soon, so look out for that. And that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to mention.
No, I mean, we're fast approaching on Christmas. Not next time I'll be on, we'll be talking probably about what we binged over Christmas. Christmas, what we liked over Christmas, and all that sort of thing.
Yes, yes, so, quite yes, possibly.
Merry Christmas to all the Geek Town listeners.
Yes, yes. We will be back next week. I'm not sure who's co-hosting next week, but we will be back next week. That's everything for this week. If you want to get the latest news throughout the week, you can go to geektown.co.uk and find all the news and air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/Geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/Geektown, and on Instagram at GeektownUK. Especially if you're a cosplay fan, there's lots and lots of cosplay stuff on there right now. Also, you can find us on Spotify. Go and search for Geektown Radio on Spotify. You can listen to us through that. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.